DJ, welcome back, man. How are you?
How you doing, TA?
You get all your you getting your suits all ready to go for media days? Because I know you're usually a big hit at media days, rocking the suits and the bow ties and whatever else you're rocking.
You know, I got everything laid out on the bed, ready to go, man. We only got a couple weeks left.
They're like the golfers. You know how the golfers, they lay out their 4 days worth of gear. You know what I mean? You got to lay out your 4 days worth of media day gear. You know, you have it all ready to go. It's grown a lot, though, hasn't it, man? I mean, here now it's like in June 11th or July 11th. A couple of years from now, it'll be Memorial Day weekend. It'll be media days, and it'll last for 2 weeks. You know what I mean? It gets longer and longer. It starts earlier and earlier.
That's right, man. I tell you what, though, we're very fortunate, though, to be a part of the SEC's media day, man. Obviously, we were there. I know I've been there going for the last 10 years or so, man, and this thing has grown to one of the must-see events as far as media across the country.
I think you've been there a little longer than 10, because I've been to 12 or 13, and I remember running into you very early on out there. Of course, see, I get confused. I ran into DJ Jones. When I first ran into DJ Jones, he was doing Columbus War Dog games with Jim Fife, the great Jim Fife. They were doing the Columbus War Dogs of the AF2. And I think at the time I was actually with the Florida Firecats. It was before I got to the Tennessee Valley with the Vipers. Yeah. I was doing the Florida Firecats game, and I couldn't believe that I had run into Jim Fife. I mean, DJ Jones, I didn't know you from Adam. Jim Fife, though, my gosh, he was doing it. And Jim loved the arena games.
Hey, man, he's a legend, and I'm just proud to, you know, God bless the dead, but I'm just glad to know that I worked with such a great man. The Auburn folks, I mean, he's like their Larry Munson to us at Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he was good stuff. And Larry Munson's a definite favorite of mine, for sure. There's no question about that. Let's talk about Georgia. First off, let's talk about the coaching situation. Now that it's been a few months, all of these rankings of coaches, of head coaches, are coming out, and all of them have Mark Richt relatively high, mostly in the top 20, and all of them also have Kirby Smart much lower because he's a first-time coach. You don't know what you're getting. However, you know, it seemed like it was time for this to happen with Mark Richt. Is there a sense that Kirby Smart might not be Mark Richt, but he might be the guy to take them where Richt didn't seem to be able to take him? In other words, Richt always seemed to hit that ceiling somewhere.
You know, Mark Richt was a special guy, and he did some special things in Athens. However, I think that, you know, the decision to move on and go in another direction and bring back one of our own, an accomplished guy like Kirby, and what he has done under the leadership of Nick Saban, I think this is the perfect time. And again, based on everything that I've seen and heard thus far since he's arrived on campus, I'm really satisfied and happy and believe that the University of Georgia's program is definitely heading in the right direction.
Not that they were at a terrible direction. You know what I mean? It's not like they had far to go. It was like they were right here. It reminded me of like Tony Dungy coaching the Tampa Bay Bucks. You know what I mean? It's like they were right there. They just needed to get through that spot, and it ended up taking John Gruden to get them through there, and then, of course, he destroyed the place. But that's a whole other...
Let me say this, though. When I say headed in the right direction, I mean, yeah, Mark Richt won a lot of games. He's done some wonderful things. But as far as competing for SEC championships, putting ourselves in an opportunity to get in the playoffs and compete for a national championship, that's the direction I think that the Georgia people, the Georgia nation, is looking for. And I think, obviously, with what Coach Smart has done alongside his mentor, he's primed himself to really... You know, come in and preach and teach that championship type effort and what it takes to get to that next level.
Just think of how everything would have been different, maybe, if Georgia completes that drive in the SEC champ. What was it, 2012? I think SEC championship game. If they complete, because they'd have stumped the same mud hole in Notre Dame that Alabama did. Let's be honest, though. That was the national championship game. And if they finish that drive, that kid doesn't catch that ball in the flat, and they're able to finish that drive somehow, Mark Richt wins a national championship, and then everything, there's a different perception, a different kind of eyeglasses on everything, isn't there?
Believe me, that drive and that particular game is still that, you know, people have nightmares in the Georgia nation, man, and that's why we're so excited to get started and give Kirby an opportunity to go ahead and make it right so that we don't ever have to think about that again. Listen, I played on the last national championship team 35 years ago, man, 35 years ago. And, you know, I mean, I'm wanting them to win another national championship, you know, and I got my ring. But, you know, for the Georgia people, we deserve a national championship, and especially with all the teams around us, man, winning several. You got Florida's won a couple. Alabama's won a couple. Auburn has even won 1-1. I mean, this is it's close to home.
Yeah, yeah. LSU's got a couple in that period of time, and when you look at that, the domination. If you'd have told me that we're going to go into a period of time where the SEC is going to win like 8 national championships in 11 years, and none of them would be Georgia, I'd be stunned. You know, that none of them would be Georgia. Now, Florida representing the East in there, 3 different teams from the West, but that would have stunned me that that would have happened. As good as Georgia was under Rick, the 10 wins every year and all of that stuff, I would have been stunned to think that they wouldn't have been part of that party, if you will.
And then, Tommy, even when you look at the production of the athletes that have been through the Athens in the last 15 years and what they're doing in the National Football League, these are, I mean, these players, man, now you got a who's list of former Georgia players over the past 13, 14, 15 years that are at the top of the game in the NFL. And they were, you know, they were top recruits coming out of high school. But then a lot of those guys didn't materialize or they didn't produce until they got to the NFL.
Right. It's a great point. DJ Jones with us, former Bulldog player and former NFL player as well. And by the way, you and I have never talked about this, but I'd love to get your thoughts on it. You went there as a quarterback, all right?
Yeah.
And you went there as a quarterback in 1980. Of course, Buck Ballew was there. He's a great friend of the show, Buck. And but you know, you had two things maybe working against you. You went there as a quarterback at a point in time where the opportunities still weren't great for African-American quarterbacks. And the style of play. I mean, do you ever sit there and think, wait a minute, I was like 30 years too early, man, because now the brothers can play quarterback. They let them play, and that was my game. I mean, if you came up now in this type of offense with these spreads and the multi-field, you were a guy that was a letterman in every sport, you know, all state and 3 different sports, all that kind of stuff in high school. I mean, nobody played the kind of offense that you played really back in 1980. Plus, you had to be the deal with being a black quarterback.
Well, you're right. You know, and it's funny you mentioned that because I was at a Rotary Club meeting in Atlanta with Coach Dooley and Kevin Butler last week, and I actually was on stage in a fireside chat interview with those two guys, and they asked me what was the most bizarre, what was the most memorable thing about Coach Dooley, and I said to them, in 1978-79, when I was being recruited by Coach Dooley, you know, black quarterbacks in the South, that wasn't a prominent thing. That wasn't something that was just happening, you know, everywhere. But Coach Dooley looked me in my eye, my parents in my eyes, in their eyes, and told us that he was going to give me an opportunity to play that position. And against you know, everybody, the newspaper, the media, the local media all over the place here in East Alabama, West Central Georgia, nobody wanted me to go to Georgia because they didn't think Dooley was going to allow me to play quarterback. However, he did. As a matter of fact, you know, I got as high as second team in the third game of the year of our national championship year in 1980, which Buck Ballew was the quarterback. Buck got knocked out in the first quarter, and of course, I went right in. Of course, now unlike the days like today, when you get knocked out, you don't come back. Well, we had those little acid packs or amino packs, or you know, they sniff that thing, boom, it brings you back. Buck was in the next series, and the rest is history. But I told Coach Dooley, I said, look, Coach, if we had the concussion protocol that we have today back then, I would have been your national championship quarterback, handing the ball to Herschel.
The fact that you would be able to go and play defense though, the way you did, it indicates a certain athleticism. What was your game like? I mean, I would imagine that you were more Conridge Holloway than you were Buck Ballew.
Actually, you know what? I ran a pro-style offense in high school. My coach, you know, he had a professional football background. He liked to throw. We had a lot of combination routes, but I was also a 4'4 guy. I was 6 feet tall, 180 pounds. So, again, as a, you know, drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates, you know, they just saw athlete all over me. And so moving to the secondary or moving to wide receiver or moving to running back, neither would have been a challenge. But fortunately for me, all the defensive backs graduated for the likes of Scott Warner and Jeff Hipp and all those guys. And I asked Coach Dooley, rather than me hold a clipboard Buck Ballew's senior year, I would want to go over and compete for a starting job, and that's what I did.
DJ Jones with us. All right, let's talk about flash forward now 35 years to what's going on. And lo and behold, there's a quarterback battle that'll play out. They got Grayson Lambert, you know, who is a returning starter, a transfer guy. Bryce Ramsey, who I thought was going to get the job last year, who, you know, did not play well at all. He's the punter, basically. But then they got this kid, Jacob Eason, a true freshman, looked great in the spring game. Twos on twos looked great in the spring game. What do you suspect happens here? Does Jacob Eason get on the field this year, or does he get held off by Grayson Lambert? Kirby Smart, being a first-year coach, you got some cover, you know what I mean? It's not like they're going to blow you out in the first year. Do you think he goes with the young kid?
Well, you know what? In my humble opinion, I think they're going to throw the young kid in there against North Carolina September 3rd in the Dome. You know, the reason I say that is because many, many times Kirby Smart has said or made a statement that the quarterbacks are all even. Now, let me ask you this, T.A. If these quarterbacks are all even, you got a guy, Lambert, that's been on campus or been in college ball 5 years. You got Ramsey, he's been in college ball 3 years. And then you got another young kid that's been on campus maybe not even eight months, and they're all even. Hey, if they're all even, baby, I got to go with the young guy because, you know, it just makes sense.
I hate to say that too, but 11 years, you know, I coached for 11 years and people would always say, I mean, I remember getting attacked by a parent, even at the college level, getting attacked by a parent when I replaced a senior linebacker with a freshman linebacker that was every bit his equal. And they're like, how can you do this to my boy? He's only got 5 games left, or three, you know, whatever it was. And I'm like, look, man, you know, if it's even, I got to go with the young guy because I got to get him reps. I need to get him ready. And it's always that way. If it's close or if it's even, especially if you're a coach that doesn't need to win 10 games to keep your job, you got to go with the young guy and get him started. Because, look, you're only going to have him 3 years anyway. You know this kid's NFL bound. I mean, you look at him, my gosh, put some weight on him and stuff. He's going to be ready to go. Might as well take your lumps, see what happens. Who knows what might happen. This East is – look – I want your thoughts on it. You can say all you want about Josh Dobbs and Tennessee and the running backs and the offensive line and everything else. It's still Butch Jones. He still doesn't win big games. And to me, the East is wide open. I truly believe everybody's going to vote for Tennessee, except for you maybe. But everybody's probably going to vote Tennessee in the East. But I think the East is still wide open.
Well, you know what? I think it's wide open as well, although I do give the edge to Tennessee. I have a lot of respect for the talent that they have on the field, and somehow, regardless of how you feel about Butch Jones, I really don't know him that well, but with that talent, I mean, I have to be an idiot to screw that up. And again, you know, I just think the Tennessee is in the best position right now. When you look at Georgia and trying to settle in on our quarterback, and if we do, we go with the young guy. Look at Florida's situation. They got a new quarterback situation down there. And South Carolina, obviously, we know Will is in his first year, so, I mean, that's pretty much it. But Tennessee can't help but be the favorite in the East.
Let's talk a little bit, too, about the running back situation. Nick Chubb coming back off of injury. What are you hearing about him? And, you know, Sony Michel doesn't exactly suck with 1,100 yards last year. I mean, that guy would be the feature guy at a lot of places. How do you think they handle Chubb and Michel?
I think that Kirby's going to be really, really wise with this situation. I mean, knowing that Sony Michel probably is going to be a first-round draft choice, and he can carry the load. But you have a couple of young guys that they're going to be counting on as well. Now, again, I'm just taking it very, very cautiously with Nick Chubb. Again, I mean, he's got to – I really wouldn't want him to come back into the third or fourth week, but just to make sure, because I just think that it's going to take that kind of time. But a couple other names to note that you don't have, probably have no, not even nowhere on your radar. Tate Crowder is a local kid from around my area in Harris County. He came out. He's a taller guy. He's more of a Eric Dickerson looking kind of guy. He's not the same speed, but he's about 6'3 and a half, 6'4, runs it really hard, gets behind his pads. And then, of course, you know, Elijah Holyfield, excuse me, Evander Holyfield's son.
Right.
I think his name is Elijah. He was coming. He's coming, and he is a guy that can do it all. He's an every down back. So I think you put the load on Sony Michel, and obviously the young guys coming in will obviously be the guys to back up. But take it very careful. Be very careful with Chubb. Don't push him. I know that we've heard all these remarkable reports about his health, and if that's true, then he'll play. But if we don't play games with a guy with that kind of talent.
Yeah, and really when you look at the schedule, they got that North Carolina game. That's going to be really tough. I don't know how much he'll be ready for that, and that's on that turf, you know, in the Georgia Dome. Then after that, it's Nicholls State and at Missouri. Missouri's in a rebuild mode with a new coach. You probably can get through that. To me, that next big game is that Ole Miss game. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the one to me, exactly, which you want to have them ready for Ole Miss.
Yeah, that's what my thinking is.
Yeah, that would be the spot probably to get him going. What about the receiver situation? Because, you know, the number one guy, Malcolm Mitchell, is gone now to the NFL, and really there's nobody that even had 400 yards receiving. There's a bunch of names in there, but what do you suspect happens with this receiving situation?
Like you said, you got a bunch of young kids with a lot of talent, to include the Ridley kid at Alabama. His little brother is in Athens right now, and he's going to be factoring into that that receiving core. But I guarantee you one thing, you're going to get some production there because you have a lot of young guys with a lot of speed. And again, I know that in years past we had a lot of long, tall guys, a lot of possession receivers in Athens. But right now, I think they probably have the best collection of speed, quick guys, the little jitterbug type guys. And you know what? They are those are the guys that obviously will make a separation in the secondary and make that the passing lanes a little easier to get the ball to for the Eastern kid, in my opinion.
DJ Jones with us talking a little bit of Georgia, a couple of weeks out now from SEC Media Days. And the bugaboo kind of there, Mark Richt, he's a great offensive mind, always has been. But the bugaboo there was always kind of defense. You know, it was always in flux. There was always a new coordinator, it felt like. And, you know, it was kind of like a revolving door type thing. And the next guy was always the guy that, now this guy, watch this guy. But now all of a sudden you got Kirby Smart. You know, he's a defensive guy. He brings half the guys, it seems like, with him from Alabama. So they bring all of that. Alabama's had the best defense in the SEC during for the last 5 or 6 years now. A lot of that obviously goes to Nick Saban, but Kirby Smart is a Nick Saban disciple. How excited are you about the defense stabilizing under a guy like Kirby Smart, Mel Tucker, the other guys that are in there?
Well, those guys are proven guys. And one thing that I do know is that Kirby has expressed to me that the guys, he's really impressed with how the guys have bought into what they're doing. I mean, the trust factor, you talk about the culture and changing the culture when new coaches come in. The culture, as far as Kirby's concerned, is developing the trust, getting those guys to trust you, getting to know those guys. And they've done a great job of that. And he's raving about, how these guys on the defensive side of the ball have adjusted and have become acclimated to their scheme and what they're teaching. And again, I look forward to not so much that them being as I guess dominating as the Alabama defense is. You got to give him time to recruit those types of defensive linemen, but they're going to make the best of what they have. And I think that you'll see a bunch of guys running to the ball and being really, really physical.
Well, Jeremy Pruitt, I mean, this whole thing, this Alabama Georgia thing is like, it's like so incestual. You know what I mean? It's like they're all the same guys. You know, they're all going back and forth. But Jeremy Pruitt, obviously also a Sabanite who was there last year. Did he run pretty much the Saban stuff so that it's really, from a personnel standpoint, it's not a huge shock to the system? I mean, you got nose tackles, you got five techniques, you got three techniques, you got the, inside plug linebackers and, that mix of personnel that is fairly similar. It's not like this is a complete overhaul defensively, right?
You're absolutely right. Very, very similar in scheme, but way different in the Moes and Joes, because the guys up there up front, again, that Alabama has, even to this year and last year, don't compare anything to what Georgia has. Not that these guys are, or walk in the park, but again, the level of skill, and again, the level, the mass, the muscle mass, and just the bulk, the true bulk and strength of that offensive defensive line at Alabama. That's what Kirby is telling us he has to work and get these kids that are on campus bigger and stronger, and he has to recruit bigger and stronger offensive and defensive linemen.
See, so you got Moes and Joes over there. We always got Jimmys and Joes over here, but you got the Moes and Joes over there. So I see you working. I feel you. I see what you're pulling for there. All right. It won't surprise you, by the way, if Richt has success at Miami, and success at Miami would be 9 wins. I mean, they'll jump through their butts if he has 9 or 10 wins up there or down there.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise you, would it, if Mark Richt has success down there? Not necessarily championship success, but certainly putting Miami back on the map.
Well, it's not going to surprise me at all, because Mark is going to go back to doing what he was the best at, and that's calling offensive plays. He's going to call, he's inheriting a very, very talented quarterback down there. So that wouldn't surprise me at all, because again, I know the creativity of Mark Richt as an offensive mind, and he's got a good quarterback down there, and I know he's going to put some skilled people around him, and he's going to figure out a way to get the ball into the end zone.
All right, if you had to pick a number, all right, they're going to be favored probably, I'm guessing, in maybe 8-9 games, maybe. There'll be an underdog against Ole Miss. There'll be an underdog against Tennessee, probably, it looks like. And most of the rest of their games, they will be a favorite. But what's a reasonable outlook, do you think? A 9-3 type thing? What would it be reasonable for Georgia? What's the expectation?
8-9 games would be a successful season in my eyes for Kirby and the Bulldogs.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there you have it. All right, man. I look forward to seeing you outdressing everybody except for the players, maybe. And it's nip and tuck between you and the players, I got to be honest with you. But I look forward to seeing you there in Hoover in a couple of weeks.
All right, man. I always look forward to seeing you, Tom.
I appreciate it.